Welcome to Kicking with Raphael here on World Football Daily. We have a special show today. We are first show of 2014, going into our fourth season in a couple months of the show. I want to say thank you for World Football Daily for giving us the format. Today we are going to focus on the English Premier League, or the British Premier League, whatever way you like to call it, but focus more on the teams that not everyone, obviously everyone knows about them, but not the top six, seven teams, more on the bottom teams and how they're going to, you know, what they're going to do in the transfer window and what exactly should their goals be for the rest of the season. And for that, I'm going to welcome on my first guest of the show from London. He writes for The Independent, one of my favorite British newspapers, Jack Pitbrook. Jack, welcome to the show.
Hi, Raphael. Thanks for having me.
Absolutely. And the first team I want to start off, we wouldn't mention the top, but we got to start off with Newcastle because they've had a very Jekyll and Hyde season, you know, a very, very poor start, then a fantastic month, and now they're back again to struggling a bit. What exactly needs to happen for this Newcastle team to be successful, and why do we see them get into these slumps where they just, you know, disappear and you know, not show us the form that they did during that, you know, 4.5-5 week span?
I think their good form this season is largely down to the benefits of not playing in the Europa League. I mean, what happened to Newcastle last year is what's happening to Swansea City this year, which is proof that unless you have a very, very big squad, you can't compete in the extra midweek games all the way through the autumn. And I think that not having that was why they went on that great run through November and December, where they won 7 out of 9 league games, including the famous wins against Chelsea, Tottenham, and Manchester United. The last two games, they fought very hard against Arsenal, but were just beaten by the better team. I didn't see the game against West Bromwich Albion on New Year's Day, but I think they'll be fine. You know that what they've got this year, which they had 2 years ago, but not last year, is they've kind of re-established a way of playing. Alan Pardew knows his best team, best combination of players. Yann Gabay is playing well. Colaccini, and of course Loic Remy, has given them what they haven't had since they lost Denver Barr, which is a, you know, high quality, reliable goal scorer up front. In terms of the last 18 games of the season, what will be most important, I think, is maintaining that way of play, not losing any of those important players to injuries, maybe finding a bigger role for Hassan Benarfa, who's, you know, their most talented player, but not always an easy man to fit into a system. And if they do that, then they should keep up their good form. The problem is that the evidence the last few years suggests that Europa League qualification is bad rather than good, and they won't particularly want to finish 5th, 6th, or 7th. So it'd be interesting to see what happens to them if, say, by March or April, it appears clear they won't be able to come 4th.
It's interesting you mention that because things are so different in a country, for example, like Israel, where I'm from. You know, when a team qualifies here for Europa League, it's considered a great success. But at the same time, you know, we don't have two matches in a week ever. We only have, you know, every Saturday, Sunday, or Monday. So I guess that's where it's a bit different. Do you ever think that Papi Cissé will ever return to the form that we saw him about 18 months ago and towards the end of the season, where he had about, I think, 12 goals and 13 appearances? Is that something that is realistic, or do we need to accept that?
I think it's probably not, just because if it was going to happen, it probably would have happened by now.
Right.
I mean, he scored a lot of goals. He scored some fantastic goals as well, but I think he benefited from his partnership with Denver Barr. I mean, Barr is a very, very good player and does an awful lot of work and made Cissé's life easier. And now they've got Remy, who is a dangerous striker but doesn't quite have the all-round game of Barr. I don't think that Remy and Cissé would work as a partnership. And they can't really play Cissé on his own because he's not really involved when he's not shooting on goal. So I think that I'd be surprised if he did a lot more in the second half of the season. And I would be surprised if Newcastle didn't try to get rid of him in the summer.
Okay, let's move down onto the bottom. Sunderland has been very interesting since Poyet has been appointed manager, you know, with the big win against Man City, but then at the same time some head-shaking losses. What exactly do Sunderland need to do to get out of this out of, you know, the bottom. I've argued on this show for a while now that I think they have a lot of talent. I think they have a lot of great players. I'm just not sure they always know how to, you know, to where to put them and how to play them. But you know, I've always been a big fan of the talent that's there. I think there are great players there. Well, I guess the first question is, do you agree? And the second question is, you know, do you think they will be in the championship next year?
I agree up to a point. I mean, they do certainly have some good players, but when you get particularly down the bottom half of the table, I think that quality makes less and less of a difference. It's more to do with the kind of intangibles, like, you know, organisation, motivation, discipline, cohesion, management, that sort of stuff. And, you know, Gus Poyet's been there, hasn't been there very long. He has certainly brought an improvement in performances. You know, they just had a 4-game unbeaten streak where they drew with West Ham and Norwich, beat Everton, and then drew with Cardiff. And they are getting better, but you think they're in that position where you feel they've already lost too much ground. You know, they hardly had any points on the board when Poyet came in.
Right.
They lost 8 of their first 9 matches of the season.
Pretty much like QPR last year. It's been
exactly right. Like QPR last year. And, you know, sometimes you can see there are teams who can almost seem to relegate themselves by October, and I fear this might happen to Sunderland. The games they've had recently haven't been particularly difficult. You know, that even though their results were better, you know, Poyet did say they need to start winning games, and Norwich City at home and Aston Villa at home are two games you've got to win. They drew 1-0, they lost the other 1-0. So I think it's looking not good at the moment for Sunderland.
Interesting. And then with West Ham, a lot of reports of what exactly is going to happen there. I think, you know, you just got to start with Andy Carroll not playing. You know, he has a lot of talent. We know that. You know, forget the price tag and all the reports of how much money, you know, was spent on him, how much money Liverpool spent on him. We know that if he was in on the pitch, he would be helping this team to some degree. How much are they missing him? How much do they miss Andy Carroll out there?
I mean, they're missing him terribly. I mean, it's certainly true to say that, like a lot of players, Andy Carroll's reputation has increased during his time out the team because, you know, he's seen as this guy who will come in and magically solve everything. But nevertheless, it's true to say that Sam Allardyce's teams play in a particular way, and that way is built around a big, muscular, assertive centre-forward like Carroll. And it's kind of inconceivable to see how a West Ham team managed by Sam Allardyce could work without him. And looking back on it, it was stupid and reckless to go into the season with Carroll and Modibo Maiga as their only fit strikers. Obviously, Carroll got injured. Maiga can't really play in the same way. And so they were desperately, you know, looking to find another striker who could do that Carroll job. They went to Mladen Petric, who hasn't done anything. They got Carlton Cole back, having released him in the summer. And he's, you know, scored 1 or 2 goals, but he's not made a big difference. And, you know, the team just doesn't work without that big number 9 up front. And, it should be no surprise, really, that they've only won 3 games all season.
Yeah, exactly. That's exactly what I think. Moving on now to Fulham. Big news, you know, the show is based out of California, so we got to give a little emphasis on Clint Dempsey returning. You know, his best years were at Fulham before he made the move to Tottenham. And, you know, they need a player like him with creativity who can add. How much, you know, I just read a great article on ESPN FC that said his addition guarantees them non-relegation. Would you agree with that?
No, I wouldn't. I mean, Clint Dempsey's quite good, but I think that he's not really he's not obviously the answer to Fulham's problems, which are, I mean, they've already got too many midfielders the wrong side of 30. They're slow, they're a bit tired, they're a complete mess at the back. You know, since Rennie Mewlin's team became head coach, they lost 4-1 to Everton, 4-2 to Manchester City, 6-0 to Hull City. And, you know, yes, they beat West Ham the other day, but West Ham are the worst team in the league at the moment. So I think they have massive structural problems. You know, and the fact that they've made a guy manager who's never managed a full team in the UK before might not necessarily help them. And while, you know, Dempsey might get the fans on side, he might create what Mewlin's team calls a good feel factor. And, you know, he might even score some goals. But I don't think he's some kind of magic solution to what are some very seriously inbuilt, ingrained problems at Fulham.
Now, you mentioned René Mewlin, the Dutch manager, you're coming in after Martin Yol was sacked. Do you think, you know, it hasn't been much. It hasn't been long, but you just, you know, you just recited some of the results that they've had since he's been the head man. You also said, you know, he hasn't really, he hasn't been head of a club in England. He was, of course, famous for being with United with Ferguson, then, you know, going over to Anzhi and, you know, being part of that project that at this point was a 2-year project because it's pretty much dead. Do you agree with the management, the front office? Do you think that that it was time for y'all to go with the results that we are seeing now? I mean, are the players buying into a Molestine's system, or is this something that's going to take time, or how do you see things transpiring? I mean, is he building for next year already, or how should we expect the rest of the season to go for Fulham?
Well, I mean, it's difficult because Fulham, as you know, were recently bought by Shahid Khan, who I think is the owner of the Jacksonville Jaguars.
Right, yes.
He's not a man who obviously knows an awful lot about football.
No.
And as ever in this sort of situation, you've got decisions being made by guys who don't really have much of a grounding in the game. I think it was certainly right to get rid of Martin Yol because Fulham were moving in the wrong direction, very obviously. You know, the players didn't want to play for him anymore. I'm not very sure how much he wants to be there. They needed to change, and I can see why they took a risk on Muenstein, because he comes with a very high reputation from his work at Manchester United. If you speak to people and players about his work at United, they were very, very keen on his work as a coach, very, very good technical coach, very astute tactically. And you know, at times you've got to take risks on people who might not have the track record and just hope that they've got the talent to do it. So far, I mean, yeah, I said the results have been bad, but some of the performances have been okay. They were quite good when they lost 2-1 to Tottenham. They beat Aston Villa. When they lost 4-2 to Manchester City, they were in the game for 75-80 minutes before Jesus Navas and James Milner scored at the end. And then they won at Norwich, and they've beaten West Ham. So it's not... The picture of Muenstein's time there isn't entirely negative, although they do have a habit of conceding a lot of goals. Will they have enough to stay up over the course of the season? Probably. I mean, I think they could. You say it's basically a 50-50, I think, whether they're going to stay up or go down. They have got... There are big problems in the team. You know, defence isn't good enough anymore. Midfield is too old and too slow. They don't really have a reliable goal scorer. But equally, there are some talented players who can do things. And I think that it's possible that they might win enough games to stay up. I mean, if I was a Fulham fan, I'd be very anxious, but I think they've got a better chance than some teams around them.
Speaking of Fulham, Hull City, every week, or not every week, excuse me, last week, going into the new year, the show, and people come on the show, we made a list of, you know, coach of the month, manager of the month, player of the month, striker of the month, or excuse me, of the season, sorry. Oh, the illness is getting to me. We came up with, a few of us came up with Steve Bruce as the manager of the year so far in the EPL. I mean, Hull's, you know, climbed all the way, it's pretty much to the middle of the table. They've done a great job coming up from the championship. How impressed have you been with the former United center back's managerial skills with this Hull City club?
Yeah, I've been very impressed with Steve Bruce. You know, Steve Bruce has been around for a while in management at spells, I think, Crystal Palace, Birmingham City, Wigan Athletic, and Sunderland. But this, you know, this is looking like some of the best work that he's ever done. Hull weren't particularly fancy to come up into the Premier League last year when I think he became manager, but he got them promoted on that very dramatic final day of the Championship season. And then this year, they've been really very good indeed. You know, they haven't spent an awful lot of money. They haven't got many particularly good players relative to teams around them. But they look pretty solid in mid-table, and they look very likely to stay up. They play a different way to some of the teams, to most of the other teams in the league, actually. They play a 3-5-2 system. And, you know, Steve Bruce is a kind of old-fashioned English kind of guy. Most people would say that he might be a bit tactically limited, but in fact, you know, he's outthought most of the teams around him with this 3-5-2 system, which is a perfect platform for Tom Huddleston, their big purchase from Tottenham Hotspur in the summer. and it's created the perfect system to get Huddle some time on the ball where he can influence the game with his brilliant long-range passing. And, you know, he's been their best player this season. He was fantastic when they beat Fulham 6-0 the other day. Jake Livermore, who they've got on loan from Tottenham, has been very good as well. As well as, you know, David Mayo in midfield, Robbie Brady out on the left, Ahmed Al-Mohammadi out on the right. It's a system which gets the most out of the player he's got, and you can't ask a manager to do more than that.
All right, let's continue moving to the table. We'll finish with one team, and then we'll move on to our last topic. Stoke City right now, interesting season. They've had a few impressive matches. How would you assess their season so far, the Potters? What do you think, you know, they can accomplish? Obviously, they're a club that their goal is not just to go down. They know they want to stay up. But what do you think their goal should be?
I mean, Stoke City are in an interesting phase of transition in that they got rid of Tony Pulis in the summer and brought in Mark Hughes, presumably in the hope that the style of football would improve. And that gets Hughes quite a difficult job because this was a very carefully constructed squad by Pulis. And what Hughes has to do is to change it to make it more exciting, but without losing the things that, you know, that kept them a stable Premier League team in the first place. And doing this with a bunch of players who, to be honest, are fairly limited, and you can't if he tears it up too much, they'll go down because, you know, they haven't really got that much quality. But I think he's kind of doing okay. You know, it's hard. They're fairly solid in 12th. I'm sure they'll stay up. They're great. The most important thing under Pulis was the home form, of course. And this year, they've won 4 home games. They beat Palace. Recently, they've beaten Sunderland, Chelsea, and Aston Villa there. I think they're unbeaten in their last 6 home matches. And there has been a bit of a change in the style of play. You know, he's brought in Usama Asaidi on loan from Liverpool, who's, you know, very exciting, talented winger. He's brought in Stephen Ireland, who played very well for him, for Mark Hughes, at Manchester City in 2008-09. He's brought him on loan, I think, from Aston Villa. And he's added a bit of imagination, intelligence in midfield, which maybe they were lacking before. So, I mean, you know, I think they'll stay up. I think that with the right buy in the summer, they might continue to move in the right direction. And you do sense that the Mark Hughes appointment is starting very slowly to move in the direction they hoped it would.
Yeah, you mentioned Asaidi. I've been really, really impressed with him, with especially that goal. I believe it was against Chelsea in the 90s.
Oh, yeah, that was a great goal.
Yeah, he's a fantastic player, and it's always great to see these players come out of, you know, smaller countries such as Morocco, and he's really come on. I think he's scored 3 or 4 goals the last few matches, and he's been an impact. Let's finish with this, Jack. A lot of transfer rumors. It's that time of the year. And actually, you know what? I apologize. There's one thing I wanted to touch up on. The big news out of Cardiff City. I think we have to touch on that. I completely blanked that out. You know, what are your thoughts? I mean, new manager, we know a lot about him, but is he going to be able to work with Tan? I mean, the fans absolutely can't stand Tan for everything he's done, changing the color. You know, everyone knows all this stuff. I don't have to recite it. But do you see him working together? I mean, do you see this working?
I think so for the immediate term, just because, you know, it's inconceivable that Ole Gunnar Solskjaer would have taken the job without having assurances from Vincent Tan and also Mehmet Dalman, who's the chairman, the kind of go-between, I think, between Tan and the manager, that it would be an acceptable way of working, at least for the time being. You know, Solskjaer was in the frame for the Aston Villa job in summer of 2012 when he went to Paul Lambert. He's hugely respected in England for his fantastic playing career at Manchester United, and then his great work as Manchester United reserve manager, and then his brilliant work as the manager of Molde in Norway,
right,
where he won they'd never won the title before, and then in 3 years under Solskjaer, they won the title twice. So he clearly knows what he's doing. He is in demand. He's been popular in England for a while, and therefore, you know, he's not a guy who was desperate to jump into this job, and he wouldn't have taken it if it were not suitable to him. Now, obviously, we all know what Vincent Tan is like, and there will be problems. I mean, it would be very unlikely if there were not. But I think that Solskjaer must be comfortable with an arrangement which will see them through the next months or year.
Interesting. Okay. As I said before, I want to finish with some transfer talk, and I want you to I'm going to name a transfer, and then I want you to tell me if you think it's going to happen or not. We'll do a couple of these. The big one coming out of Spain that we've been seeing a lot, you know, United are struggling in the midfield and are seeking a creative young midfielder. So I got to go with Akoke out of Atletico Madrid. You know, we all know how amazing season they've had. They're tied with Barcelona, 46 points atop of La Liga, and he's been a very important part of that midfield. Do you see Akoke leaving Atletico to make the jump to Old Trafford?
I'd say very unlikely on that one. You know, Atletico Madrid have got a Champions League last 16 game against Milan. They're involved in a genuine La Liga title race for the first time in a while. And, I mean, why would they sell one of their best players? I mean, you know, I suppose United, in theory, could offer £70 million or whatever and force Atletico's hand, but that's not really how United work. And I just can't see Atletico letting him go.
Okay, that's exactly what I wrote in a piece today, actually, for BN Sports. So we agree on that. You know, I guess everyone knows that Juan Mata is not, you know, enjoyed working with Mourinho for the most part. And then we really saw it a couple days ago when Mourinho subbed him out and he went kind of bananas on the bench. And then Mourinho was Mourinho and gave forget the exact quote, but something like, if he wants to leave, he can leave. You know, it seems like a childish relationship here, though. We have seen this in the past, and we have seen that the player does end up staying. There are a lot of cases where the players do go, but we do see when Mourinho can reconcile, when he understands the player is important to the club. So that is my question for you. Does Mourinho believe that Juan Mata is an important piece to this club? I mean, he was voted, I think, the most valuable player on the team last year under Benitez, but, you know, different manager, different style. Do you think that Jose will be ready to part with him in this transfer window?
I mean, clearly Mourinho doesn't think that Juan Mata is a fantastic player, or because he barely ever plays him.
Right.
I mean, whether or not, I'm sure he'd be willing to let him go in the summer, because in the summer, obviously, Mourinho can bring in a few more players, change the squad, bring it to kind of turn it into more of a Mourinho squad. In January, I think he'd probably be open to it, depending on where it was. I mean, he wouldn't. Obviously, you know, he wouldn't let him go anywhere else in the Premier League because they're, you know, Chelsea fighting to win the title. If people always talk about Paris Saint-Germain with Juan Mata, and I personally think Mata's too good for PSG, but that's probably the most plausible option in January. But that said, what Mourinho will also be aware of is, you know, if Oscar was to get injured next week and he'd already got rid of Mata, then he'd be furious with himself because, I mean, you know, name me a better second choice player in the Premier League than Juan Mata. There is no one. And he's never going to be able to get anyone half as good as Mata to come in as a replacement if Oscar did get injured. So I think I probably say it's unlikely that Mata would go in January. I think he'll probably go in the summer. That said, it's the World Cup year.
Right. That's a very big factor.
Desperate to play as much football as possible between now and June to make sure he's in the Spain squad. And maybe, you know, I think that is often a big consideration this time of year. I mean, you'll see a lot of players, I think, moving this month to play as much football as they can in the next 5 months so that they can get, so they can try and get a ticket to Brazil.
So final answer is he gone or not? Sounds like no.
Yeah, I just go with no.
Okay, two more left. A big one that I'm excited about because I got to really watch Alvaro Morata in Israel this summer. And out of all the people, all the players that were part of the tournament, you know, him, Insigne, Isco, Verratti, these were the guys that impressed, but really, him and Isco are the two biggest ones that the media here was the most impressed by and said the potential is you know, the largest. And despite that, Alvaro's only, I think, played in two matches, the Liga matches. You know, he's not playing in Champions League, obviously. And he's not really getting his opportunities. He's not 18 anymore. He's 21. You know, a lot of reports that Arsenal need a striker. We all know what's going on with Giroud. Podolski's back, but you know that doesn't really mean much in my opinion. Do you see Morata wanting to play? I mean, is he leave or is he stay content with the fact that he's going to probably play, let's say, 8, you know, 9 total matches the whole year?
I don't know. I mean, I'm sure that it must have occurred to him that Karim Benzema has never really become the player people thought he would at Real Madrid. Mm-hmm. And that if he sticks around and tries hard there, it's quite possible that they'll sell Benzema to Monaco or Paris or wherever, and he might have more chance in Madrid. Well, you know, how long he stays patient there with his current role, who's to say? I mean, you're certainly right that he would improve a lot of teams in the Premier League, even the top of the Premier League. Certainly true to say that Arsenal need another striker because Bender is injured again. Podolski is a million miles away from full fitness and sharpness. And Giroud has played, I think, 26 out of Arsenal's 30 competitive games this season and is very clearly exhausted. One of the Sun newspaper in England this morning said that Arsenal might go for Dimitar Berbatov this month.
Right.
Yeah, so I'm sure they'll have a look out for something short-term and doable. Could they take a very talented Real Madrid youngster away in January when Real Madrid have got Champions League and a title race? Probably not. I think Morata is another who is likely to move in the summer than this month. So he is very good.
Okay. This one, I believe he's going to move in the summer, now. So I'd like to get your opinion, and that is Egyptian Basel star Mahmoud Salah, who's really been fantastic last year in Europa League all the way in the semifinals. And then this year, I'm sure as you know, since you're in the English media, against Chelsea at Stamford Bridge and at home, only 21 years old. Liverpool seemed to be very, very keen in him, very interested in him. He was already at age 20, voted the best player in Switzerland last year. A lot of hype about him. He scores. I mean, he always scores. He's a winger striker type. In the national team, he scored 17 goals in less than 30 appearances, which is amazing. And he seems to just be very comfortable, you know, against top clubs. And I personally think that, you know, with everything I've read and with who I've spoken with in Liverpool, to some journalists, it looks like they're going to get him, or they're going to at least try, especially now that that Basel are out of the Champions League and they're up against my Maccabi Tel Aviv team. A lot of people in Israel are hoping that Salah does not come back, not for political reasons, of course, but for footballing reasons. They don't want to see him because he scares them, and we're hoping that this Maccabi Tel Aviv team can move on to probably play Ajax. That's a long, long story, but what do you think? Do you see Salah making the move to Liverpool and getting Basel some cash?
I certainly hope so. I mean, I saw Salah at White Hart Lane in the Europa League last year when he tore Tottenham to pieces. He's a brilliant player. He's so quick. He's so dangerous. He knows exactly where the goal is. He can beat a man. He can shoot, cross, pass. He's got tricks. He's great. I mean, he's a fantastic kind of old-fashioned winger. And he's very, very exciting player to watch. I'm not sure. I mean, to be honest, I think Liverpool could be one or two signings away from making the Champions League or even pushing the top three. And so Salah is exactly the sort of player that they should be going for. Basel, I think, were knocked out of the Champions League and are now in the Europa League instead. And that means that they might be more willing, you know, they might be more willing to sell than they would have been had they had Champions League knockout games to look forward to. So I suppose it depends on if Basel think they can make more money out of them in the summer, if they can, because what they really want is they want three or four big teams from England and Germany to effectively have an auction for him.
Right, a bit, right.
And at the moment, you know, the summer is obviously a better time to have that happen than January. I don't know I'm sure he would like to come to the Premier League sooner rather than later. So I suppose it depends on whether Liverpool is going to be the best option he'll get. That said, Liverpool are, you know, will be playing Champions League football next year. And, you know, if they keep their players and Bryce Feather wins the summer, they could be a very good team next season. So I guess I'd say probably 50-50 on this one, but I'd certainly like it to happen because he's a tremendous talent.
Yeah, absolutely. He's really, really fun to watch. And like I said, here in Israel, we hope that he'll be with Liverpool so that he doesn't arrive with Basel, because Basel actually defeated Maccabi Tel Aviv in third round qualifying for Champions League and took our spot in the group stages. So there's a bit of revenge, factor there for them playing against each other in the top 32. Jack, thank you so much for joining us. I want to let everyone know where they can follow you on Twitter, and that's at Jack, J-A-C-K, Pitt, P-I-T-T, Brooke, B-R-O-O-K-E. Jack, thank you so much for coming on the show.
Thanks for having me.
And enjoy football. If you're watching the PSG match now, it's an exciting match. And if not, the FA Cup. Have a great weekend.
You too. Cheers. Bye.
Bye. Well, that's all we have for today. Short 30-minute episode. Pretty much due to the fact that I am ill. I still wanted to do the show because I don't like to ever miss the show. But that's why we had a short show today. But we'll be back next week with 2 to 3 guests as usual. You can always check me out on Twitter at RafaelG23. Everyone also follow Jack. Thank you for checking me out here on World Football Daily. And have a great weekend. And enjoy the summer transfer. The winter transfer. Really mixing things up today. We'll be back next week really examining the latest in the transfer window. And I'm sure by then there'll be a lot of deals. We've seen a lot of rumors that are very fascinating with Balotelli to Arsenal and Ronaldinho to Turkey and to Beşiktaş, to be more specific. I always have problems saying their name, but a very well-respected club in Turkey. But a lot of rumors. Not sure how many of the rumors are actually true, but we'll analyze that next week with Mark Serber for sure. And definitely a lot of great guests, so check us out next week. Thank you.